Hey everyone, I'm your host Tom Shaughnessy and welcome back to Chain Reaction, a research-driven podcast that's a part of Delphi Digital. If you're not on Delphi's research portal, you're missing out on the critical analysis read by the top minds in the crypto space, so be sure to check it out. One quick housekeeping item, nothing said on this podcast is a solicitation to buy or sell any security or token or to make any financial decisions. I may personally hold tokens mentioned on the podcast, and you can view our show notes below for our complete disclosures. With that, let's jump into the episode. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Delphi podcast. I'm Tom Shaughnessy, host of the Chain Reaction segment. Today I have on Zach and Alex, who are the founders of TokenTax, which is a tax software for crypto. Full disclosure, I personally use it. We use it for Delphi Ventures. We're huge fans, and that's why we wanted to have Zach and Alex on. How's it going, guys?
Great. Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Yeah, guys. I mean, it's just so easy to use TokenTax. I feel like this is an ad, but it isn't. It just is a breath of fresh air. Tell us why you guys built TokenTax. This is originally something you built for yourselves, right?
Yeah, back in 2017, you know, with the bull run that was happening at that time, basically that was the beginning of a lot of crypto-to-crypto trades that were going on. But basically, long story short, it got started as an entry into the Product Hunt Google Global Hackathon and ended up winning first place out of, you know, hundreds or a couple thousand startups. And just using the money that was won from that, we were able to bootstrap and just focused on building product and getting it out for that tax season, which was a really big year for everyone in 2017 before the last couple of years have kind of been crypto winter. Yeah, that was sort of our origin story and our genesis story. And one of the biggest things in 2017 was that people didn't understand that crypto to crypto trades were taxable events. And also just that, hey, if you took Bitcoin and Ethereum and swapped it into altcoins and then you owed taxes on that, you basically had to do twice as well in an after-tax basis on your new purchase just to break even. And so there was a big personal finance, financial literacy, financial education component that went along with just explaining to people about, hey, these are the after-tax impacts of trading. And so, you know, from the early days, we just started getting customers right away, trying to be cash flow positive, and then just listening to what our customers wanted and building functionality and tools like even with our interactions with you guys, you know, you talked, hey, what about this protocol or what's coming in the pipeline? And then we add that to the engineering roadmap that Alex and his team oversee, and we just build from there.
That's awesome that you guys started and got incubated and grew from that. And Alex, I don't know how you keep up, man, because I know we send a lot of integrations we want your way. But
yeah, the short end of it is we work night and day to help out DeFi investors.
It's awesome. So can you guys give some color as to how hard it was to do crypto taxes, you know, any year before, say, 2018? Because for those new to crypto, I don't know if they have enough context on just how much of a mess it was.
Yeah, it was. I mean, like you said, we needed this tool for our own crypto trading. You know, I had been working in Excel, sort of building a way to track tax lots and things like that, and just working with people who could afford to hire, you know, a private wealth manager or private accountant or something to do. But, you know, people just had tools like that. That's what CPAs were using. And it's really impossible without software to try to track tens of thousands of transactions let alone some people got into the hundred thousands, into the millions of transactions. And then when you layer in the crypto to crypto aspect where you have different prices of each coin, and then you have, you know, you got to figure out the pricing. Like, do you use a volume weighted average pricing? Or sometimes people are trading, you know, what looks like $800 of Bitcoin for what looked like $600 worth of whatever altcoin. And so you have different US dollar values of both sides of a trade. There was a ton of complexity and really, really difficult for people trying to do it on their own. And basically that's what existed before Token Tax. There were a couple of random software out there that were just built by engineers, but none of them had an accounting, you know, accountants or any accounting personnel in-house trying to figure out the tax situations. You basically needed to be like a CPA and an Excel wizard just to try to get your data right. And then most CPAs, most accountants were just trying to do whatever in Excel, like, hey, line up my customer's data, or just push back on their clients and say, hey, you got to figure out the crypto side. Get me something I can import into my tax software and I'll go from there. And so that's why we work with so many CPAs and so many accountants who have a number of clients. But yeah, it was definitely, I mean, it's still the Wild West as you guys can tell, but it really, really was the Wild West back then. Just basically Excel, different engineers deciding to build their own tools, people building their own parsers, their own scrapers. And just a lot of people who had a lot of trades saying, you know what, I think I'll just build my own crypto tax software because I need it for myself. So that's how you ended up with quite a few random little crypto tax software companies that basically only supported like Binance and Gemini or Coinbase and Binance and Gemini. And they didn't have the broad, like we have support over 100 exchanges, all these DeFi protocols, you know, we really focus on it. A lot of them were just built to like solve one person's problems. And so I think you've seen, you know, some consolidation in the industry from there and some of those kind of disappearing.
That's interesting. That's a great color. And, you know, it seems like obviously CPAs have an awesome job. They're very in the weeds, but obviously crypto is a brave new world to them. Everything's new. When I'm like an individual user, a fund, or do a lot of people come to you and say, you know, look, I pay my CPA a ton of money, he's a really smart guy, but on the flip side, I'd rather have a platform that pulls in every one of my wallets, every DeFi protocol on every exchange in real time versus doing this on an Excel sheet. Is that one of the main reasons people come to you guys?
Yeah, it's just, you know, very inefficient to be doing it on an Excel sheet. And also, you know, a lot of people pay their CPA or they have really expensive tax preparers that they hire that don't know anything about crypto. And so they have to hire us. We figure all of that out. And then they go and they pay their CPA again to understand what we've done. And so that's why we kind of have that in-house where, you know, we have some clients who use their own CPAs, work with the big four accounting firms, whatever. But we also have CPAs and tax preparers in-house who file the full tax returns or file returns for funds, for C-corps, for LLCs, for S-corps, as well as individuals, you know, anyone ranging from a W-2 in crypto to even, you know, several properties and, oh, I trade crypto as an S-corp, I do this, I do that. So we handle the whole, we're a one-stop shop for anything you need in crypto tax. And yeah, so a couple of years ago, we acquired an accounting firm and started offering that service as well.
That's awesome. And I guess one of the end metrics for people is they want to see the data. They want to know, you know, down to the penny what they owe and what, you know, their total gross profit was, et cetera, all the top line numbers. But they also don't want to get audited, right? Is there any metrics around, you know, reducing audits by using Token Tax or any thought through on that side of things? Or are people just in a better position if they were to be audited?
I think that's a great question. I think one of the big reasons why people were getting audited is that they would, or getting requests for a lot more information or a deep dive with the IRS, is that they tried to figure out their crypto. What you have to report is all your individual transactions. So like what we call an 8949 that lists out every individual, and this is just how the US tax code works. You got to report the proceeds, cost basis, and gain loss for every trade. And so what a lot of people did is they were like, I can't figure that out. Let me just estimate. And let me just put one line on here that says, all right, I made like 100,000 and no detail. And so then a couple of years pass and the IRS says, hey, we actually need all the, we need all the details, or we want to take a closer look. You know, all you did was report the top line number. And so I think a lot of people are getting themselves into trouble for doing that in 2016 and 2017. As far as audits go, you know, it's the same, crypto is the same as regular taxes. Like people are getting audited the more money they make. And people who are self-employed are a much higher rate of audit. And, you know, hopefully I think the IRS is just being smart and they're just sorting it based on the people they know that had crypto. You know, they have the list of people who got 1099Ks and accounts at Gemini and Coinbase. And they just go down the list and they just check, hey, did the person on my list file a Schedule D or Schedule C or a Schedule E? Is there somewhere where they could have included crypto? If not, let's definitely put them in a basket where they're going to get a letter that says, hey, we suspect you did not report it correctly. So they're just going down the known universe of people that they know have crypto And I imagine sorting it in the order of the volume of trades, because that's what was reported on those 1099-Ks. And they're just going right down the list. And obviously things are really backed up with the pandemic. But, you know, as we've seen, tens of thousands of letters have gone out this year of them, you know, requesting more information or requesting certification that people had filled it out correctly. And so that's created a lot of business, a lot of people coming to us who tried to do it themselves or had their CPA do it or didn't do it complete, or filed an incomplete tax return. And now they're coming to us and we're amending, you know, 17, 18, 19, helping them get compliant and especially get ahead of those letters before, you know, people know they're going to get the letter. So they just want to get all their prior year tax returns in order so they can confidently say, oh yeah, everything's good. And the IRS can just take a look, check a box and move on to the next person, hopefully. And hopefully, you know, seeing the token tax name that they've, you know, seen a lot of our clients or people that have used us and they can be confident in the work will go a long way as audits start to ramp up, you know, in the coming year or so.
Yeah, no, that's really great color. I mean, to be honest, I feel like I've heard a lot of people doing that, just taking, you know, the large number of what they got in, what they got out and trying to figure out a tax rate on that, because frankly, it was very hard to do it in the past. Like you're supposed to go on what, Etherscan and export all your transactions to Excel and estimate prices. Like it was just impossible in the past to do all that.
Yeah, really, really tough to do without software, even if you're a really talented engineer and you know accounting. And so I think the IRS is somewhat understanding on that. I mean, some people just could have supplied a lot more information and didn't. And I don't think they'll look as favorably on that. But the people that did try really hard, they tried to get an accurate number. They tried to submit their tax, you know, all their transactions. And then for whatever reason, oh, the software, you know, or things are getting better every year. Or, hey, I wasn't able to get the data from here because Wobi stopped allowing US users to get their tax data. Things that the IRS is probably going to be more understanding for. They just want to see a good faith effort made to pay enough taxes. And especially for people that paid more taxes than they owe. I think that goes a long way in terms of, obviously the IRS is going to like that a lot more than someone who owed $400,000, but only, you know, estimated $150,000. And so I think luckily that's like a common sense, what we would hope to see from a common sense perspective. And that is kind of what we're seeing so far.
Yeah, the good faith effort goes a long way. You're totally right about that. And just getting into the actual protocol, like or your platform, like from the user experience perspective, after you choose all of your wallets, exchanges, link in everything, link in all your data, which is then automated your part, you guys have three different choices to calculate your tax burden. You could do FIFO, LIFO, or minimization. I think most people are pretty up to speed on the first two, but I'd like to kind of dig into the minimization aspect that you guys have. Is that proprietary? And how does that work to calculate one's tax burden on token tax?
Yeah, I mean, we named it minimization. Just, you could say it's proprietary, but basically just to give a little bit of an accounting lesson, there's two worlds of accounting. There's specific identification, which includes FIFO, LIFO, HIFO, LOFO, anytime you can identify which tax lot you're selling. And then there's average cost accounting, which is what's required in the UK, in Canada, and several other places. So minimization is just tax rate adjusted HIFO. You know, basically we take a look. It's the way that I trade my personal crypto. It's the way I trade my personal taxes and always had. You know, when we were figuring this out back in 2017, 2016, we were looking at, hey, when I sell Tesla stock, I'm not going to sell the ones I bought last quarter with my dividend reinvest or Google stock, any stock with a dividend. You know, normally what investors do is they reinvest the dividends. And so they get new shares every quarter. When they go to sell them, you know, most of these platforms, E-Trade, Ameritrade, they opt you into FIFO because at least then you're getting long-term capital gains, which are kind of the holy grail of, in the tax rates, long-term capital gains are better than short-term capital gains. And so basically what minimization does is it just says, hey, every time you're making a trade, what's the tax optimized tax lots to select? And, but all of these are just types of specific identification. And so the IRS, you know, a couple of years ago in October, when they finally gave guidance, October 2019, they outlined that specific identification is allowed, which makes perfect sense because it's basically, you know, FIFO, LIFO. If you're doing FIFO, then you're picking a tax lot. So the alternative to that is really average cost, which is what they say is required in the UK and Canada. And we could have a whole long discussion about the pros and cons of the Canadian and UK systems versus the US. You know, in the US, when you buy like a coffee with Bitcoin, you have to report that on a Schedule D on an 8949. You have to say, oh yeah, I had 14 cents of gain on that. Whereas the UK has a threshold of, you know, close to $15,000 of gains that you have to make before you have to report anything. So they're catching a lot small. They're not catching like millions of small fish who just have a small amount of crypto trades. They're not trying to put a reporting burden on them, which I think is really would be a great step forward for the US if we would start doing things like that. Obviously, it'd be bad for token tax, but for the crypto community and for crypto adoption and just as an American and as a whole, I think it would be a great step. But hopefully that kind of answers your question. But it's more about your intent while you're trading. It's like, hey, I'm intending to do FIFO, I'm intending to do LIFO, or hey, I'm intending to sell the Bitcoin that I bought 2 years ago at a high price that I can sell at a loss, not the Bitcoin I bought 7 months ago that I'm going to be selling at a short-term capital gain. And that's kind of just the idea. We're trying not to overcomplicate it, but obviously there's many other types of specific identification, HIFO, LOFO. But yeah, hopefully that kind of makes sense in a nutshell.
No. The crash course is helpful. It's crazy to me that you have to fill out a form if you're buying a coffee. That's how the tax code works in other countries. Like, insane.
Here. Yeah. In the US, it's like, hey, I went shopping. I spent a little bit of Bitcoin. I spent $4 of Bitcoin. I actually bought it 4 weeks ago for $4.38. So I had a 38 cent loss. But now my taxes are way more complicated. I have to have an 8949 Schedule D. Like, if you go to H&R Block, they're not going to be able to do it, or they're going to charge you to be in their highest basket of people who own properties, who own their own business. And it's, I don't know. I mean, that's why one of the big reasons why token tax exists. We're trying to make this as streamlined and easy and automated as possible for people. But at the same time, the US tax code is so onerous. You know, I think the US tax prep business is larger than all the other countries in the world combined. You know, we have way more complicated tax code. In the UK, only like 5% of people file taxes. Just to put it in perspective, people that work for a big company, the company sends in how much they paid them and how much in taxes was withheld. And that's it. And they either get money back or they get a bill that they send money in for. Only like self-employed people who are people who make a lot of money in capital gains have to file anything there. And it's a much more sensible tax system, I think. Whereas here, you know, everybody has to file a tax return. Even if you just had a W-2, it's complicated. There aren't good free options out there. So, you know, when Alex and I talk about the social impact, one thing, a big thing is the teaching people about personal finance, just how to track their tax lots, what FIFO and LIFO even mean. Another big part of it is just how can we fix the tax system in America as a whole? You know, so many people have to spend so much money filing taxes who aren't big earners, you know, or who even lost money. How can we simplify this and make the system work better for everyone, or even work, you know, collaboratively with entities to try to simplify this on the taxpayer side? So we'll see. You know, we work with TurboTax, we work with Intuit, a lot of the big players in the space. But at the same time, I think there's a lot of room to improve the whole process for Americans in general.
One last question on that, Zach. I love the color and context you just gave. Selfishly, is a complex tax code good for business?
Yeah, it's good for token tax in terms of, hey, it keeps us busy this year. But when we're thinking about the long-term focus of the company, like you said, Alex and the engineering team are so busy with so many problems. Like, if we didn't have to help random mom and pop who made $80 trading on, you know, Bitcoin on Coinbase, our team would be freed up to solve much bigger problems and to say like, hey, how can we support DeFi companies that are trying to create an ecosystem of banking, of financial institutions that are outside of the traditional financial system? You know, the reason why crypto is doing so well this year, one of the reasons I think is because harkens back to when Bitcoin was created and we were just printing tons of money as a country, but also the entire world. And now you see it times 10, you know, we're just printing so much money. There's very little accountability. You know, there are really big issues that we'd love to focus on in crypto. And so what I'd say is, like, in the short run, sure, it's good for business that everyone has to file a tax return, but we're trying not to be focused on that. We're trying to hope to automate and disintermediate that part so we could focus on bigger problems and more interesting applications of what we're doing here at Token Tax. But yeah, in the short run, that's why it's kind of ironic to hear it from us, because of course we benefit from a complicated tax code. And that's why I think it's our job to kind of put a spotlight on the hypocrisy of the world that we're living. You know, who writes this tax code? Like, is it the big four accounting for it? You know, is it, it's sort of a really interesting situation that I think Americans who only pay tax in America probably don't have much perspective on. We have customers in 80 different countries, and I see how much simpler it is in many other countries and how much easier it is for people investing in crypto over in Portugal, in the UK, as compared to America. And it really hurts adoption here, for one. And it just seems unfair that our tax code is so complicated and so punitive on the most simple, like lowest income tax earners in this country. If, you know, just to put it one more, put an exclamation point on this, the 80% or, you know, I think 80% of taxpayers make under 80,000 a year. All the taxes combined that they pay are 200 billion. Just to put the spending in perspective of like, hey, you know, Jeff Bezos is worth $200 billion. If we had, you know, a smaller wealth tax, there's a lot of different things that could be done. And we could say, hey, 80% of you out there, you no longer even have to file a tax return. I just think how much utility would that bring to the country as a whole? And I don't know how much, you know, I think we've talked about it on prior podcasts a lot, but my background was doing Teach for America, doing impact investing. I come from a world of impact investing and social impact. And that's how we kind of got into cryptocurrency. So Alex, Barrett, myself, we all share the same mindset of like, hey, we're in crypto because we're trying to make the world a better place. You know, right? We're doing crypto taxes. It's a really important need. But we're always having that mindset of like, hey, can we make the world a better place by doing this? And I think that just teaching people about the problems in taxation in this country and how much of the taxes are paid by, you know, which is a very small amount, are paid by 80% of the taxpayers. But meanwhile, you see massive lines at H&R Block and all these people have to spend money every year to file their taxes. So yeah, it is a little interesting to hear it from us, but that's why. Hopefully that makes sense.
No, I like the nuanced color, man. It's helpful and it's understanding. And one quick follow-up to that, while we're on the topic, how do you think through just the lost time? Like if it takes people so long to do their taxes, that's obviously a detriment to the economy because these people aren't out there creating value.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, there are so many ways to quantify it. I mean, like I said, there's 100 million taxpayers in the US. If 80 million of those people only pay 200 billion in taxes, the government just spent, you know, $4 or $5 trillion on this pandemic stimulus type stuff, which was great. I mean, we needed to do something. It's once in a century crisis. But at the same time, it really puts it in perspective. I think it really puts it in perspective of like, all right, well, we just spent 80 times that in 1 year. And so when you look at the lost productivity, half of those people are self-filing. So they're spending, you know, at least a weekend, 2 weekends. We work with people every week or every year at tax season who are like, hey, I've spent 2 months trying to do my taxes, or I've spent every weekend, let alone the stress. A lot of these people are high paid engineers who have really other important, valuable things they really should be doing with their time, or they're taking a day off work just to do their taxes. So it could be calculated. And I imagine it's huge in terms of lost productivity in the US, let alone the money that's just spent on tax prep. But to shamelessly plug ourselves, our big thing is we want to create value for people. So let alone the lost time and energy, we try to be affordable, price comparable with an accountant that somebody might already be using, except that our CPAs are experts in crypto. And you can feel a lot more confident that we'll know, hey, does an FBAR need to be filed? We'll be up to date on the rule. We'll know how to do yield farming, DeFi, things like that. And basically our bottom line is just create value for customers. And that's how we've bootstrapped, you know, Alex and I from the early days when we were just working around the clock, getting customers in. But if people have more money in their pocket because they hired us to do their taxes, you know, that's our dream. And that's how you get people to keep coming back and signing up again, and how we've been able to just avoid, you know, raising venture capital and just grow organically and find great people like Barrett, like Oscar, like Devin, Andrew, that we've built our team around.
That's incredible. And guys, one last question for you on just the actual business before we go into some questions from the community, some nuanced ones. Tell us about tax loss harvesting going into the new year. You guys have a dashboard that makes it really easy to see what people should be tax loss harvesting going into the new year. What's the process around this? I mean, obviously people just sell, but you know, what if there's not liquidity for an asset? Do they just send it to a burn address? Or are there times where, you know, you have to wait 30 days to rebuy the asset or stuff like that? Is there any nuance around tax loss harvesting that people should be aware of?
Yeah, it's, you know, it goes along with the personal finance ideology of our company, but basically wealthy people, hedge fund managers, people that have a Morgan Stanley private wealth manager, whatever, every year around November and December, they take a look at their stock portfolio historically and they say, hey, all right, you've had some capital gains. We've already sold some stocks throughout the year. You've got 100,000 in capital gains. Why don't we take a look at some of your positions that might be underwater? Okay, it looks like you bought NVIDIA stock. Looks like you bought it at the peak. All right, why don't we, you've got a $50,000 loss there. If you sell that, you know, we can wait 30 days if you really want to go and re-enter the position. That's the wash sale rule limit for securities, for stocks, for bonds. But basically, you harvest losses to shield yourself from capital gains that you've already incurred. And you can also shield up to $3,000 in ordinary income. And there's also no reason, even if you already have a loss, a capital loss for the year, there's no reason not to harvest them really, because the losses don't expire. They roll forward forever and shield capital gains in future years. And they shield up to $3,000 a year in ordinary income. So if you're, you know, making a couple hundred thousand a year in California or New York, you're basically getting 50 cents on the dollar, 50, 55 cents on the dollar, even by shielding your ordinary income with these capital losses. So it can be quite valuable. And yeah, we tried to make this as easy as possible. We had a lot of customers who wanted it. We had to create a spreadsheet, kind of show them all their holdings bifurcated into unrealized gains and unrealized losses. So Alex and the engineering team saw what we were doing on the tax side and they said, hey, we could automate that. We could make a tool. So we have some VIP plans and gold full filing plans for people who have more complicated situations where you actually get a rep, an accountant assigned to work with you and figure this out. But we also have that tax loss harvesting dashboard where you could just take a look and see. And like you talked about, it's not clear if wash sale rules apply to crypto, but basically if they do, we kind of just preach better safe than sorry. If you wait 30 days before buying back a position, you have no worries about whether the loss will be disallowed. You know, I think some people have accidental wash sales by like buying and selling into Binance Coin or Ethereum because it's a medium of exchange. And I really think that the IRS is going to look at that with a common sense view and just say, hey, look, it was an accidental wash sale. It's not like you sold it and immediately bought it back, which we see some people on crypto Twitter say, oh, wash sales definitely don't apply. You could just sell anything and immediately buy it back. To me, that doesn't really pass the smell test on a common sense perspective. Yeah. And you brought up one other thing about the liquidity. You know, if there isn't liquidity, there's an organization we worked with called Docens that was great at it. But basically the idea was, hey, you hold some altcoin, you have a really big loss on it, but you need to sell it. So you could set up something formal with a friend or whatever it is where, hey, I'm going to sell you this. But the key is that it can't be reversible. So it's really great if you can find a third party to sell it to. And you can see the value, like, hey, I bought it for $40,000. It's worth $80 right now, but there's nowhere for me to sell it for. Why don't I just sell it to my friend? Or why don't I just sell it to some third party that I know for $30? I take the capital loss. But the key is you can't have it be reversible. So, you know, that's the risk of doing it with a friend or like a spouse or whatever. If you do that, I would say just document it in email, make it clear, hey, this is a transaction that cannot be reversed. I sold, you know, this many ART token, whatever, for $30. But yeah, that's a really big issue. It's better if you can sell it on an exchange because then you have proof. Hey, I sold it to someone. I don't know who they are. You know, I did it. Now I have this big capital loss. It's a lot more complicated when you're selling it to related parties. And so that's why we've kind of helped some of our clients connect them with someone that either wanted to buy a stake in that token or the Docens organization that was basically donating half their profits to support financial literacy and other initiatives in crypto. But yeah, that is a big concern. If there's no liquidity, it's really hard to actually recognize and get a realized tax loss. So you got to be creative about it.
Yeah, no, that's excellent, caller. The audit trail, especially the email thread for those transactions, is important too. And one question on the integrations, how hard is it to integrate new DeFi platforms? Because these are all really specific. The code varies project to project. A lot of these are changing really rapidly. Like, how hard is it to integrate new platforms? What's the up and just staying up with it?
Yeah, it's incredibly difficult. I mean, all I can say from my perspective, I see Alex and the engineering team, you know, all hours of the night. All right, what are we going to add next? This one just came out. How are we going to, you know, they're brainstorming, they're troubleshooting the best way to add it. And, you know, we're full of people at TokenTax that run through walls and just work, you know, around the clock in kind of crazy hours. But I'm just continuously amazed that they're able to keep adding the integrations, but it's a lot of elbow grease, I can definitely say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All the reasons that you said are completely accurate. We, it's really challenging, and they're all very different, and they require an intense amount of study, which luckily we do because we really like it. So it's quite fun.
Yeah, that's just awesome. Logic yeah, puzzling all the different transactions. And all right, this type of transaction, how is the data coming in and how does it need to be shown to the IRS? Like, there's a lot of ins and outs that need to be. So yeah, it's a whole team effort with the accounting side too. So, but
it's a lot to keep up with, but it's good for you guys. It's a huge competitive advantage. And yeah, guys, we got a bunch of questions from Twitter from our members. I'd love to kind of run through them on not like a rapid fire thing at all, but I think they're pretty cool questions, especially for you guys. So a bunch of questions here. One question is tax implications of staking ETH and ETH 2.0. I'm sure this is just like staking any other asset, but how do people account for those gains?
Yeah. So there's ETH 2.0. There's actually not that much information on it yet. So I think everyone is the cart's getting in front of the horse at the moment. If you read through all of their documentation, and the only thing that people are seeing right now are just people chatting about it online and speculation on what's happening. So realistically, all the information that we have is there's phase zero out now, and you can't withdraw your ETH until at least phase 1.5. So, I mean, essentially what ETH 2.0 is you deposit your ETH, and then that gives you, that allows you to run a validator. And then you basically get some keys that, verify that is your stake running that validator. And then, you either get slashed or you get that balance gets added onto. But at the moment, you're still technically in control of that ETH, but it's locked up for at least a year or so. So you could consider that just a deposit. I mean, imagine you sending ETH from one of your wallets to another one of your wallet. You just can't access that wallet for a year and a year or so. So you have the validator keys. No one else has access to that. There is no other underlying asset yet because that's not been made clear in the spec at the moment. So as far as we're concerned, it's purely a deposit.
What is staking count as? Is that like interest income on taxes? What does it generally count as?
It's kind of a gray area because it could be like mining, like earned income, or it could be other income, which is like passive income, kind of like interest on a checking account, like you said, in terms of tax rates. Then there's a proof of stake alliance. There's a whole alliance and a set of entities in the space who are lobbying the IRS to basically say, hey, look, staking actually shouldn't be income when it's received, which is what the guidance has been right now from the IRS. Actually, that hurts smaller players. It forces people to sell their staking holdings because they need to pay taxes in dollars when all they've gotten is whatever token. But and so you're basically diluting the number of people who are involved in this staking. You're just helping the people who have outside venture capital. And so because of that, there's people lobbying that, hey, it actually shouldn't be anything until it's a capital gain when we sell it. But for right now, the IRS has been pretty clear. Hey, it's income when you receive it. And then the type of income can be a gray area, whether it's earned income or not. But right now, by default, it's typically passive income for just ordinary investors like a mom and pop who are just earning some staking coins with Tezos or whatever it is, or doing that on Coinbase.
No, that's fair. And another one for you guys, and I don't know if this is actually like a great question or not, but I'll lob it to you guys. A lot of people are involved with a lot of active aggregators right now. So think urine, pickle, money moving in and out of vaults and jars, things like that. How is that accounted for? Is it as simple as I put X in a jar and I get Y back and there's a short-term gain there? Or I don't know, if I keep the money in a jar for a year, is it long-term? Yeah.
The truth that we have is actually the blockchain. Like, all this stuff exists in record on the blockchain. And when someone deposits into either like a pickle jar, or when they deposit into urine, or when they deposit into AV, different things are happening. So sometimes the conversion's one-to-one, and then the interest comes through other transactions. That's what happens on AV. And in the case of urine or Compound was the first to do this, that you deposit your money into the urine pool, and then that gives you pool shares. And that pool share, the price of those pool shares continually rises, but by a small amount. And when you withdraw from the pool, you get a certain amount of money back. So from a tax perspective, that looks like a regular trade. You know, if I got, if I put $1 in and I got $1.50 out over the course of the year, that's technically a capital gain. Now, I guess the other part of this question is what's happening underneath. So there is stuff that's happening, like they're doing running harvest transactions that then market sells and then to the benefit of the whole pool. You could think of this similar to ETFs. I mean, this is managed by the underlying entity, but the user themselves are not filing capital gains on the exact transactions that are happening. Only if the underlying structure of what they're holding completely changes that you need to kind of reconsider it.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I was always wondering whether or not people didn't go into aggregators because they weren't sure of the tax implications of what was happening kind of under the hood. But it seems like that's kind of a bit sorted now.
It depends on the data. So urine compound work the same way with increasing price. And then AV works with one-to-one, and then you get interest.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense. A couple other rapid-fire questions. I got to keep it going because these are interesting. What about rebasing coins like Ampleforth, like things that constrict or inflate their supply as they vary from a peg of like a dollar?
Yeah. So in its simplest form, it's just like any other crypto. You know, when you only recognize taxes when you realize the profit or losses. So the thing that's actually happening though is
in a perfect world.
In a perfect world, the thing that's actually happening though is your balance is rising and decreasing depending on what rebases that happen. So if you now have a higher balance than what you started with, and then you were to sell that coin, you'd essentially not have some basis for that original coin because you technically have a larger balance.
That makes a lot of sense.
But it should be a capital gain. But basically, like, this is the whole challenge in crypto and just what you talked about earlier with the prior question. But like, eventually, basically, we get data and we know what it should be represented to the IRS. And like, okay, it should be a capital gain. The whole goal is that we basically have to sometimes do backflips with the data so that the right amount of taxes are owed. And so that's the ultimate goal, is like take the data in and present it to the IRS. Same with like old school, like BitMEX, it would be great if they told us the opening and the closing of an option position that was taken, but they don't. They tell you daily P&Ls. So we have to kind of figure out how much in taxes are owed in total. And so it ends up being a little bit of a situation like that, where each protocol has different data they give you. And so it requires a little bit of a different handling, but we always keep the common sense framework of like, basically, that should be a capital gain. If you've held it for over a year, it should be a long-term capital gain. But how will that spit out automatically if no one tells us that they're doing it or whatever? And so we're always trying to adapt the software to that.
Makes sense. And another nuanced one, how do rug pulls work? Like, let's say I invested 10 grand and developers make off with the money. How do I account for that? And how do I educate or tell the IRS that, look, I really don't have the money anymore?
Yeah, that's a complicated one. I mean, there's such thing as casualty losses. There are such thing as losses held for investment. That's a Schedule A deduction. Potentially, it could be a worthless security if you bought something that then, it got converted to another ticker and then it was gone. But basically, one of the biggest takeaways is that casualty losses, like if you get your wallet hacked or whatever, you get the money stolen, a casualty loss is the worst outcome now, because with the tax changes and the tax law changes a couple years ago, they disallowed that for individuals. So now if individuals have a casualty loss, it's not deductible. And so the goal is, that's why people set up corporate structures for their investing. Because if you have like a C corp or an S corp, you actually can get something for that loss in some cases. Now it's a lot more complexity. You lose the value of long-term capital gains. There are a lot of reasons why it doesn't make sense to have a C corp, but that casualty loss aspect is one of the biggest ones. And so this is one of the scariest gray areas for people in crypto, is that you may get nothing for that, quote unquote rug pull. It kind of depends, but there's different pathways that we can try to see if, your accountant or if we're comfortable signing off on it.
Or maybe there might also still be a market for it. So I know the term rug pull gets used quite broadly now. I mean, it's often, with Bree, for example, there was still a market for it that it was tradable. Some people have their coins locked, but in other rug pulls, it's just like the you know, it was trading at $1. Now it's trading at 1 cent. So that in that scenario, there's still a market for it. You could sell it and recognize that loss.
Got it. And guys, just one clarification, and you probably already answered this in your conversation on your answer on kind of rebasing coins, but is there any implications on moving from wrapped coins like WBTC to BTC? Like, does your cost basis reset or anything like that? I'm assuming not, but just wondering.
It depends really. But I mean, it depends if it's like an identical asset, but this is definitely a gray area that the IRS hasn't weighed in on yet. But basically, they're on the spectrum of conservatism. If you traded one, if arguably you've traded one cryptocurrency for another, it might be a taxable event. And the IRS might say, hey, worst of all possible worlds, if it's a loss, it's disallowed. If it's a gain, you have to pay taxes on it. But I mean, that's like the worst case scenario. And then the other end of the spectrum is kind of like, hey, it wasn't really a taxable event. You just took one asset, you wrapped it, like nothing actually changed. And so you might have to manually pull that out, but it can make your crypto taxes much more complicated. And, you know, basically it takes you from like what would be an automated software level to potentially needing like an actual accountant to do your reconciliation for you, unfortunately, when it comes to digesting that data.
Guys, last question for you, and this has been incredible. I guess it's for each of you, just to round out the discussion. What's the biggest or largest mistake that the average crypto investor makes with their taxes? I know it's a tough one because you guys solve issues all day long that are seriously nuanced. I guess, what's the most common mistake they make?
Most common mistake? Well, for me, I would say that it's just not understanding this one important lesson that an ounce of prevention saves a pound of cure. You know, if people would come and talk to an accountant or talk to someone before the end of the year, there's so much more that can be done to help with like, hey, your tax liability is this, but before the end of the year, you could still, you know, you could do retirement accounts, you could sell some of your losing positions, you could do this, you could do that. Whereas to your point earlier, just to pull the whole podcast together, in 2017, people came to us halfway through 2018 and they said, hey, help me with my crypto taxes, please. We look at what happened in 2017. They took $10,000, turned it into $1 million. And then by the time they found us halfway through 2018, they had lost most of it. So now they took $10,000, they turned it into $200,000. You'd think they'd be in a great position, but no, because they had $1 million in short-term capital gains 1 year and then $800,000 in losses the next year that don't carry backward. They actually owe the IRS $500,000 and their stack's only worth $200,000. And so I think the biggest thing that people don't understand is they just ostrich, they stick their head in the sand, they hope for the best. And then a couple weeks before their taxes are due, they come try to figure it out for the past year or the past 2 years. And by then it's really too late to do much. So I'd say an ounce of prevention saves a pound of cure, you know, specifically with tax loss harvesting, if you want to be really specific, but we'll see what Alex says.
I think on the flip side, I think things are changing for the better for users. And my thing is that record keeping is one of the most important aspects to having an easy time doing this stuff. And I think that as we're seeing this shift from people trading on centralized exchanges to people trading on DEXs and using protocols and stuff, that's actually a great thing from a record keeping perspective, because all that data is public and it can be accessed for, you know, who knows how long, hopefully as long as the blockchain exists. That's very good, because your data is stored on the network, hopefully, you know, pseudo anonymously, and you can then access that data whenever you want. Versus we have so many stories of people like, oh, an exchange locked me out. Oh, I can't get my records. Oh, like I was on this exchange, but now they're doing KYC in a different way. And like, I can't like get through their support wall. There's so many stories like that. And honestly, trading on DEXs and trading on that stuff, it's still a bit of a gray area, but the UX, as far as like giving the user control of their data and the user control of so many other things, it's I love seeing that trend. So I think just, you know, sticking to a blockchain is great.
That's awesome. Guys, you haven't plugged TokenTax yet. Where do people that are listening go on? Where do they get started?
Yeah, just go to tokentax.co or follow us on Twitter at tokentax. And then on our website, tokentax.co, on the bottom right on intercom, You know, our team is there around the clock, able to answer whatever questions you have about our software, about crypto taxes. If you want to just talk about the future of DeFi or just whatever you want to catch up on.
I'm going to log on to that support in the middle of the night if I can't sleep and throw some DeFi questions.
You know, we'll be there. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we'll be there.
Guys, thanks so much for your time today.
Okay. Thank you
for having us.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed it, please support the show by hitting subscribe on iTunes, writing a review, or sharing this episode on Twitter and LinkedIn. And stay tuned for our next episode out soon.